Hi, everybody. This is Sharon Odom from Cosmetic Surgery Today, and welcome to another episode of our continuing series, Inside Cosmetic Surgery. Our special guest today is Dr. Carrie Neese, a triple board certified cosmetic and facial plastic surgeon with offices in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Calhoun, Georgia. Hi, Dr. Neese. Welcome.
Hey, Sharon. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Well, today's discussion is, how do you pronounce this word, otoplasty?
Otoplasty.
Otoplasty, okay. And which is what exactly?
Well, it's a cosmetic procedure for the ears. And that often includes making the ears smaller or what most people call an ear pinning, or pinning them back if they're too prominent. And sometimes it's a reconstruction of the ear if there's a trauma or some sort of congenital deformity.
So when children have ears that kids make fun of, this is the procedure they have?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. So is ear pinning and otoplasty interchangeable?
It is, but, you know, that kind of simplifies it a little bit too much. Right? And ear pinning is seems like a procedure maybe where the ear is prominent and you're just reducing the prominence or the projection from the side of the head. And in many cases, it's much more complicated than that. If it's that simple, then it is a fairly simple and straightforward procedure, but, you know, it's still a surgery and not just a few stitches. But, you know, an otoplasty really can refer to, it's a bigger term that can refer to just purely a cosmetic setback or pinning procedure. It can be a reduction in the size of the ear, change in the shape, and then probably more commonly, there's some sort of congenital or developmental deformity. And it could be recreating the certain folds, the appearance of the ear, as well as potentially some reconstruction if the ear didn't develop as normal.
Okay, so it's not just ear pinning; it's surgery on the ear.
Correct. On the outer part of the ear, not the ear canal or anything on the inside. So it's still an aesthetic procedure, but it could be considered a reconstructive type procedure as well, just depending on what the problem is.
Now, how long does the procedure take?
Well, if it's simply just a setback for a prominent ear, then it may only take about 20 to 30 minutes per side, so about an hour. But if you're talking about doing a procedure where you're having to recreate the folds, like what's called the anti-helical rim, or something more invasive where you may need to do a cartilage graft or something like, sometimes we'll actually take cartilage from the rib to recreate it, and even have to do like a skin graft, then you could be talking about 3 or 4 hours. So it could be a very short procedure or a very long procedure, depending on what the goal is and what we're trying to accomplish.
I see. And so I imagine if it's removing cartilage from different places, then that would require general anesthesia?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. For doing any kind of reconstructive work or borrowing cartilage from somewhere else to help reconstruct or a skin graft, then absolutely general anesthesia is required. If it's simply a ear pinning or just a setback type procedure for a prominent ear, then actually it can be done with local anesthesia and or with a little IV sedation, depending on the patient. It's one thing that's going to cut. One good question is, was this something we do for children or adults or both? So when I do an otoplasty on a child, which is commonly about a 5 or 6 year old before they start kindergarten, then we do them under general anesthesia because, you know, they're not going to tolerate
right.
all the numbing shots that it takes. And, you know, just sitting still for the procedure for a kid that age is not really reasonable to expect.
Right.
So for children, we almost always do general anesthesia. For adults, though, it's fairly commonly done with local, with just some light sedation, even just sometimes oral sedation like Valium. And they tolerate it very well.
Okay. What percentage of your patients are adults versus children?
You know, it's about 50-50, actually. And, you know, in certain centers, if you're in the, you know, maybe a university setting, probably you're going to be more likely doing children. I'm in private practice, you know, kind of a away from the university setting, and so I actually probably get, I do more adults than children at this stage. I probably do about 75% adults and about 25% children, just based on the nature of my practice.
Really? That's yeah. So these are adults that made it through childhood with ears that they were unhappy with, and then when they got to
correct.
Adulthood, okay, and they decided
to... Yeah, and it's common in the, maybe say the 20-year-olds, 20 to 30-year-olds that are, so that it's rarely in someone over age 40, but it definitely is, there are quite a few adults who made it through childhood or who had issues, with their confidence and those sort of things, and they've, gotten to be an adult and maybe got a job and then can afford to actually, and or get the nerve up sometimes because they're embarrassed by it to come in and actually have something done.
Right. Now, you mentioned the word setback. What is that exactly?
Well, if the ear is protruding from the side of the head, if you look at someone straight on, if you're seeing too much of the ear, it looks more prominent, then it's just a matter of rotating the outer part, the helical rim, back towards the side of the head so that it basically narrows the angle between the mastoid bone behind the ear and the ear itself. So it you're basically rotating the ear back towards closer to the side of the head. So that's called a setback procedure.
Okay, and ear pinning is?
The same thing. Ear pinning is kind of the more common term
for a
otoplasty where you're really simply just setting the ear back closer to the side of the head.
Okay, and what sort of downtime are patients looking at after otoplasty?
Honestly, it's just a few days. It's pretty quick. The recovery is very, very quick. You get very little swelling, very little pain, very little bruising. So the thing is, the first 24 hours, you usually get all wrapped up with a special headband, kind of a compression-type bandage. And then for a couple weeks after, they have to wear like a tennis headband to hold the ears back, and usually a very light gauze dressing. So it's really more of just having to have that dressing on is what you would consider downtime. Otherwise, if it weren't for that, they could be back to kind of normal routine activities within just a few days. But because of the dressing, I would say that downtime is about a week.
Right, because people don't want to walk around with dressing on their head.
That's right. They want to, exactly. They all have a funny dressing or headband on, and so they're kind of embarrassed by that and usually kind of stay home or maybe run around a little and do some errands, but not, maybe not go to work or not go to school.
Mm-hmm.
For about a week.
Maybe. Do the kids get it done mostly during the summer?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Summer, Christmas break, spring break, things like
right.
that. And it's ideal for kids, if we're going to do it before they even start school. It's ideal that kind of the textbook answer is we try to do it before they start kindergarten if possible. And that age is important because we want the ear to be fairly close to its adult size.
Right.
And that's the age when it's getting fairly close is when the kid's about 5 to 6 years old. And so it's kind of why that's the magic perfect time to do an otoplasty on a child if necessary.
So that means that ears are pretty much the adult size at age 6? Really? They don't grow that much more after that?
Yeah, not much more. It's pretty close to, by that age, yes.
Interesting. Okay, so what are the risks?
Well, I mean, the risk of any surgery, of course, you have bleeding, infection, those sort of things. But when you're talking about otoplasty specifically, an infection would be a risk that would be a concern because we're suturing the cartilage back to the lining of the bone. And so if cartilage gets infected, that can be a problem. We do use antibiotics before and the week after the surgery to minimize that. But an infection would be something definitely to discuss. And the other risk is just you don't get a great cosmetic outcome. It's pretty rare, and because you have two ears, the risk of having asymmetry afterwards, meaning maybe one worked really well and you got a great result, and the other side's not quite as good, and so you're always going to compare one to the other. So risk of needing to do a revision on one side or the other is there. It's probably in a 10% range or so, which for aesthetic surgery is that's fairly normal. But besides that, besides an infection, bleeding is very rare. anytime you're under general anesthesia, have a risk of having a reaction to the anesthesia. But you know, young, healthy people, especially kids, that's really rare too. So needing to the biggest risk is an infection or needing a revision just because the cosmetic outcome isn't as good as you'd like.
Right, that's symmetry, right.
Right, symmetry is big.
Right, how do you make sure? I guess that's part of your experience, right, making sure
that's
that
right.
They...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It is. It's you know, there's a lot of artistry to it. It's everything that we do as cosmetic surgeons, a lot of artistic ability comes into play. And, you know, there's some measurements you can do to make sure that if you're doing, say, just an ear pinning or a setback procedure, that the outer part of the ear, the helical rim, is at certain points is the same distance from the back of the scalp, you know, behind the ear. You can do some measurements and just, you know, general appraisal of your results at the end of the procedure. So that's the nature of cosmetic surgery.
Right. Now, given that this is a popular procedure for children, wouldn't it fall under reconstructive surgery?
You know, it depends. If it's purely that the ears are too big or prominent or protruding from the side of the head too much, that really is an aesthetic procedure. This doesn't need to be done.
Right.
You're not going to go to your insurance company or health insurance company, and in most cases, you're not going to get them to pay for it. Now, if the difference is, what if a child was born with one ear that's normal and one ear that's, you know, only partially developed?
Mm.
And yes, that is a reconstructive problem. It still would be considered cosmetic, but you could certainly argue that this would be a necessary or indicated procedure for the child, not necessarily for improvements in hearing, but just to get from abnormal to normal, not just unappealing aesthetically to appealing. So in children with a deformed ear or a poorly developed ear, then certainly that would be considered a reconstructive and probably medically indicated.
Right, and that goes back to the definition of plastic surgery versus cosmetic surgery, correct?
It does, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, plastic surgery is more commonly considered, you know, I'm a facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon as well as a cosmetic surgeon. So, you know, there's definitely a difference between the two, of course.
Right. I know that people tend to use them interchangeably, but they are different.
They are different, no question. And it's interchangeable, and a lot of people's minds because they just don't understand the difference. But and it's, you know, it's easy. Most people just say plastic surgery and they think of everything.
Right.
They actually
right.
more commonly think of the cosmetic procedures than the reconstruction. And the reality is that in whether it's facial plastic surgery or general plastic surgery, a lot of our training is more in dealing with trauma and reconstruction after cancer and those sort of things. And the cosmetic part is not as prominent in most plastic surgeons' training. That usually comes with more training after your residency or fellowship, comes with experience, and then, you know, with there are cosmetic surgery fellowships out there, which I'm actually a director of a cosmetic surgery fellowship program here in Chattanooga, and there are about 25 around the country that are available.
Right. Now, didn't you do some fellowship or training with the AACS? Could you talk about
yes.
that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I'm a fellow of the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery, and also I completed after I did my head and neck surgery and facial plastic surgery training, I did a cosmetic surgery fellowship with Jim English in Little Rock, Arkansas. So it's an entire year devoted just to cosmetic surgery, and that's 5 years ago, and now I actually just started my own program through the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery. So I have a fellowship training program that is it's a postgraduate program. So you have to complete a surgery residency first and be board certified in one of the ABMS surgical boards, and then you can qualify to come and work with me for a year and learn cosmetic surgery, and then qualify to sit for the boards in the cosmetic surgery, to the American Board of Cosmetic Surgery, which I'm a diplomat of and actually a board examiner as well.
So it sounds like training is probably the most important factor in doing this type of surgery. So how would you advise someone to find the right doctor to do this kind of procedure?
You know, training is really important. Having just a, what I would say is a God-given a talent for, having some artistic ability as well as having great surgical training. And then, what's your area of interest? For me, I'm interested in both face and body surgery, but, my area of greatest expertise would be in facial rejuvenation, so facelifts and rhinoplasty and, otoplasty and, brow lifts, things like that, because that's probably what I've done the most, even though I've done plenty of breast surgery and tummy tucks and things like that. My main interest is in the face, and so that's why, that's how you can kind of gauge what surgeon may be right for you is find out what they really love to do, what's most interesting to them. They may be qualified to do everything, head to toe based on their training and education experience over time. But, if you really say you want to have a facelift or a rhinoplasty or even an otoplasty, you interview a doctor and say, well, how many do you do?
Right.
What's your favorite procedure to do and why, and because things that you like the most is likely what you're going to be best at.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, do you have any patient stories you can share with us?
Let's see, sure. Mm-hmm. Regarding otoplasty or anything in specific?
Otoplasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with otoplasty, I actually had an otoplasty patient just about 2 weeks ago that was about a 25-year-old gentleman who had been thinking about doing it, honestly, he wanted to do it when he was about 8 or 9 years old, and he never had the resources. His parents didn't have the finances because, it's not cheap, and his was, unfortunately, was purely a cosmetic procedure. He had very similar ears. They were just really prominent. And one thing that bothered him was that he has early male pattern baldness, so he couldn't even grow his hair out to cover it. He felt like because of his, he had a significant amount of baldness that he shaved his head, and that made his ears look even more prominent.
Right.
So he, but when he graduated high school, he got a job, and he's been working, saving money for almost 6 years to come and have it done. And we were able to do it for him just, 2 weeks ago. And he came back the next day, and we took off the dressing and looked, and was just thrilled. That's something he's been longing for years and years. And he was just, his self-confidence, you could see just immediately when he left the room that day, the next day in the office was dramatically better. So it's really exciting to be able to do that for someone, just, give him the confidence just to face the day. And every morning you get him look in the mirror, he's going to be happier with
sure.
his appearance. So, and that gives, it makes, that translates into all aspects of his life.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Right.
So that's exciting. We're happy. That's really rewarding.
This has been interesting. What would you like to tell our listeners about your practice? And I know that you pioneered a procedure that maybe we can talk about another time, the laser
sure.
facelift, right?
Yeah, we have two new procedures that we've developed over the last couple of years. One is a laser facelift where it's a minimally invasive facial rejuvenation where we use two lasers. One is a subdermal laser for the neck and jawline. The other one is a resurfacing CO2, fractional CO2 laser. And that combination is really powerful for the right patient population, which is women. They're like late 30s to late 40s. You don't need a facelift. Don't need the, a big procedure with scars and lots of downtime, but want to look, maybe 5 years younger. And that has been really, really successful. And there's a couple other surgeons around the country who are doing a similar thing now. So it's kind of catching on I think will become a pretty popular rejuvenation procedure here in the next couple of years. And the other one is a type of breast lift with augmentation combination procedure that I can't talk about too much yet because we're just in the sort of research phase with that. But we're, I think, going to make that available to the public and to other surgeons to learn it here in the next couple months.
Oh, that sounds like a scoop. Well, I'll be definitely following up with you on that one. Okay.
Yes, it's very interesting. I'll be able to talk about it after January.
Okay, all right. Well, what's your website address?
Well, our website is southernsurgicalarts.com. It's Dr. Deal and myself, and we're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and our other office in Calhoun, Georgia, about an hour apart, North Georgia and in Southeast Tennessee. And I've been here for 5 years, and Dr. Deal's been with me for 1 year. We've got a very busy practice of our own surgery center, AAAHC accredited. We've got the fellowship program where we're training one surgeon a year right now, and actually next year we've been approved to train two surgeons a year through our Academy of Cosmetic Surgery fellowship program. So we're excited about that. And welcome to answer any questions anyone might have. Website's extremely valuable as far as information and lots of before and after pictures, and you know, lists all the procedures we offer, and of course, you know, bio information about Dr. Deal and myself.
Great.
But that's definitely the, if you're interested in learning about me or Dr. Deal or our practice, just go to the website and pretty much find anything you want.
Thank you, Dr. Neese. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your time, and we'll speak to you soon.
All right, Sharon. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.